Hello and welcome to an episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Rethink Possible. Today, I'm excited to have Superintendent Rhoda Murray-Perry-Reed with us, who is going to talk about how she is reimagining student success metrics. And so with that, I'll let her give a little background, but I'm really excited to have you with us today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bob. It's awesome to be with you, and thanks for the opportunity.
So tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about how you're reimagining student success metrics.
Awesome. So a little bit about me. So I serve as the proud superintendent of Hopkins Public Schools, which is a district of about 7,000 students in Hopkins, Minnetonka, Golden Valley, and four other cities. We actually draw from 74 different cities across the state, thanks to open enrollment. And, you know, if we're thinking about how all of us are trying to reimagine public education to stop the practices that have either harmed students or marginalized students, and think more deeply about what we need to do differently so that all students can be successful. One of the things that we're trying to do here in Hopkins is reimagine student success metrics, right? And I know that's kind of a mouthful, but essentially student success metrics are data that schools and school districts use to determine growth and mastery in our students' educational journeys, all the way from early childhood to post-secondary education. And our current metrics here in the state, across the nation, really across the world, right, mostly include standardized test scores, but they also include grades and GPA and things like that, right? So what we know is that when we look at who is successful in our public school system and who or which populations have tended to struggle or be unsuccessful, the predictability along the lines of race and parent income are very, very clear, very stark. And we start to see that white and upper income Asian students fare much better on standardized tests than our students of color or low-income students. And so we think that this is a flaw not in our students, for goodness sake. This is our flaw in our metric system in this country and really around the world. And so we want to reimagine what student success metrics might look like. Like, what are, if we're really honest with ourselves and if we have conversations with colleges and employers and parents and even students themselves, what would all of these stakeholders say are important to assess in student learning? And what might be some more holistic, more comprehensive, more accurate, more student-centered ways of measuring those important things? And that's what we do by reimagining student success metrics.
Given that, how have you gone about figuring out the answers to those questions as far as creating a baseline to work from?
Well, it's been a very long journey. If you can imagine, like, how do you reimagine a whole assessment system? I mean, it's a very, very large task. So we are not there yet, but we have done a lot of work around that. It really started with our visioning process back in 2017, 2018, where we had the courage to just say out loud that we want to reimagine our student success metrics. So that has to be the starting point. And then what we did is we've had a number of opportunities for stakeholders to come together in task forces or stakeholder focus groups to then answer the questions around, like, well, what kinds of student learning is important, and what might be some ways of measuring. And one of the things, so there's several things that we have actually accomplished and produced besides just asking brave questions. One is that in Hopkins, we have built what we call a graduate profile. So based on lots and lots of stakeholder conversations and interviewing colleges and employers, we have identified the traits of the Hopkins scholar. And so by the time students graduate from Hopkins, we want them to be confident and have their own voice. We want them to be critical and holistic thinkers. We want them to be empathetic and globally minded and even well-traveled. So these are some of the traits of the Hopkins scholar, which then inform what we are saying is important in student learning. So another thing we've done is we hired an instructional data scientist. Her name is Dr. Abby Holm, and I should really mention her by name because she's done so many awesome things for our system, including being in charge of this effort to redefine student success metrics. And we also hired a data specialist per school. So each of our schools has a data specialist. And together, this group has interviewed almost 200 individual stakeholders representing students, parents, staff, colleges, employers, asking a number of different questions to help us get more and more narrowly defined ideas around what our redefined student success metrics would look like. And so then out of all of those stakeholder conversations came a qualitative data report that Dr. Holm and her team put together. And it's actually like 80 pages in length and gives a lot of information about what is important around student learning to our stakeholders in the system and how we might move forward. One big bucket of thinking that came out of that work aligns with a direction in which education is moving across our globe, and that is competency-based education. So a number of us have heard of CBE, competency-based education. And it's this idea that we can't measure student learning in terms of like how many hours a kid sat in a desk and how many minutes they read a certain book, or like what was that specific score that they got on a teacher assigned test, right? Like those are very antiquated, or goodness sake, the Carnegie unit, right? Like just because a kid spends 60 hours in a seat this course and, you know, did all these things, now they have a B, and like this is the measure of their student learning. Like those are very antiquated ways of measuring learning, and competency-based education is a paradigm shift, because instead of saying, you know, these students learned this thing because they were in this class for X number of hours and earned this letter grade, instead, it's skill-based and designed to allow students to move at their own pace, because we know that kids learn at different paces. And so competency-based education allows us to specifically identify and articulate very important skills, attributes, or dispositions that students would acquire over time, moving at their own pace, if learning would be standards aligned, and then there's some kind of a holistic measurement or assessment, you know, either at milestone points along the way or at the end to demonstrate that learning. And those assessments, if we're being progressive and thoughtful about them, are not just, you know, pencil and paper tests, but they are active demonstrations of that learning and of those skills that were developed.
I just was in this conversation this past week with someone. We were talking about just this idea of changing this up with how we're measuring student achievement, success, kind of that whole umbrella. And one of their comments was, isn't this the same as outcome-based education of 20 years ago? And in my mind, it's a little bit different in that it's more than just what I think outcome-based education was based on skill. But do you have anything that you walk through with people in terms of that? Or have you heard that as well?
I mean, I think that maybe loosely competency-based education and outcome-based education are linked. But I think that one key difference, well, maybe there's two key differences. One, I think that you could have outcome-based education in a traditional school system where kids are in their desk and they're in a class for a specific time and they can't get out of it until they do X, Y, or Z, right? Whereas competency-based education is very explicitly focused on intentionally articulated skills that are aligned with what the world really needs and standards-driven. And if we're doing competency-based education well, then we've created like fluidity in our system and in our process. And we're playing around with the variables of time and place, right? We're allowing students to move at their own pace, to learn outside of the classroom, to learn in the field, to learn with, you know, a community expert and with a teacher, versus what you see in our traditional system, which is kids in a classroom with a teacher and some books. And the teacher says, this is what we're going to do. And everyone does the same thing, right?
Love it. So I have to ask, you're moving down this path. You've got a long-term plan, strategic plan, direction, profile of a graduate, all that strategy living there. How did you bring your leadership along? How'd you get them on board or in line with this?
Yes, so that's very important. So we were very strategic and thoughtful about who we needed to have on board, like you're saying. And in the beginning, which was a number of years ago, so now, you know, you maybe your next question is, well, how do you keep people there? Or how do you bring parents on board, right? But like back in the day in 2018, right, we were working with a firm and we literally kind of created a list of these are all the leaders that need to be there, from the board to the district to the principals. We need teacher representation. We want teachers who do have strong values around tradition, but we also want teachers who are, you know, like really outside of the box thinkers. Like, let's get both brains and minds in the space. We want students there. We want parents there. So yeah, we did that whole thing to make sure that all the right people were there for the chunks of very important work that were done in the beginning to set this foundation. And then, like, I feel like that's the easy part. I think the hard part is, like, after your early onboarders, like, how do you get everyone else on board? And, well, how do you get them informed? How do you get them on board? How do you get them moving in this direction? And so a couple of things that we've done. First of all, we have a very large district-wide instructional leadership group. We call it HILT. It's the Hopkins Instructional Leadership Team. And it's literally like 80 people. And we come together once a month for 3 hours to learn these different components of all of the, you know, instructional, the teaching and learning things that we're doing differently in Hopkins. And we're following a change management model called ADCAR. Like, we're really forcing ourselves to say and realize things like, okay, we can't expect people to do something new if they haven't been made aware of it in the first place, right? We also can't move to knowledge before we build the desire and build the appetite. So we're trying to be thoughtful about that change management process. And then I think probably our most challenging audience is parents, because we all went to school either 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, and people have very strong ideas about what school should be like and feel like. And parents don't want schools and districts to experiment with their kids. Like, you're doing something totally new and my kids experiment. Like, I'm not cool with that, right? So it's really takes a lot of creativity and persistence and like just diplomacy and partnership, kind of working with our parents to introduce, you know, like new ways of thinking about teaching and learning, new ways of thinking about assessment and things like that.
So the EDCAR gives you that system then, gives you kind of a framework to work through that piece. Is there, have there been much opportunity for student voice as part of this as well?
Yes. There has been some, not as much as we want. And that's one of my projects for next year is, it's literally called Systematizing Student Voice. And I went to a student-led conference yesterday that Education Evolving and the Bush Foundation put on. They held it at the Guthrie, and I got some really good ideas there about how we can really operationalize and systematize how students are involved in very important decision making. So yes, we've interviewed a ton of students throughout doing this work, but we still have a long ways to go because students don't necessarily sit on these instructional leadership teams that are learning this information and bringing it back to schools and to teachers and school staff to help, you know, everyone know how we're moving forward. And so there's ways that we can be more thoughtful about that.
So then it brings to mind two questions. One is, as of today, where are you at in the Hopkins schools with the implementation process as far as this implementing the reimagining of the metrics and having it? Are you testing it? Are you piloting it in certain places? And then along the way, are you finding ways to benchmark progress?
That's good. So basically, where we are is we are starting to identify the tools that are available that we don't have to create that could help us administer a more holistic assessment system that is in line with what we said was important, which are those traits of a Hopkins scholar and then like the all the competencies that align with all those traits. So for example, one of the things that we say is, okay, it's really important for our students to have confidence, to be empathetic, to view themselves as holistic learners. So one tool that we use to measure some of those things is Panorama. And a lot of schools use Panorama. I mean, not like every school in Minnesota, but there must be enough schools that do, because I think maybe 12 million students, K-12 nationwide, are asked to respond to a Panorama survey. So we administer Panorama to our students in the fall, in the spring, and then we get feedback on questions around how satisfied students are with their classroom, with their teachers, with their school, how safe they feel, if they feel a strong sense of belonging, if they view themselves as empathetic, if they view themselves as having strong like social skills, right? So we have said in Hopkins, like Panorama is our SEL instrument, and it's that data is just as important as FastBridge to learn, you know, how well students are doing with literacy and math. And the Panorama data is just as important as MCA. So I think what gets really challenging is what is the tool that we could use to measure globally minded and well-traveled? And we even set up opportunity, how do we systematize opportunities for all students to get either virtual or in-person travel experiences, right? We do have IB, International Baccalaureate, which helps students be more globally minded. But it's like you have to think of, like, if there's something important that you said you want students to learn, you have to make sure those opportunities are there in the first place before you apply the measurement instrument, right? So I guess to answer your question, we're in the middle of identifying, okay, what are the tools that are available that could help us be more holistic with our assessment system? And then how do we, and then a second thing that we're working on is basically writing grade band level competency skill-based learning progressions that are aligned with our graduate traits, if that makes sense. So kindergarten, grade one, grade two, these are all the things that, these are all the ways students can build their empathy or their global mindedness or their confidence or their critical thinking. So being clear about what those sub-competencies are with at all the grade levels and aligned with the graduate traits.
Are you finding the need to spend resources to train people in doing that work? Or is it something where internally your teachers and staff are learning it along the way while they're doing it? Or are you able to find, or are you finding, you know, gaps in, back to, we all went to school in a different time, right? When, and I think a lot of our teachers got trained in a different time. And is there any gaps that you're finding that are kind of thematic in this?
Well, I think there's an expectation gap, right? Like there are societal expectations for how we're going to prepare students. And it's hard to change those mindsets and shape those expectations. So I think that's going to always be important work for us in Hopkins, but also for all of us in public education, because there is a need to be more maybe less traditional and more progressive so that we can include more students in our success results. And at the same time, like most of our colleges are still accepting letter-based transcripts, as an example, versus transcripts that truly are more holistically representing individual students and listing in descriptive ways what skills they're really great at as aligned with that school or that district or that state's set of key competencies, right? I think there's only three or four states in this country that have a statewide graduate profile. And I don't know if those states are then working with the schools and the districts in the state to say, okay, now that we have this statewide graduate profile, here's what all of your transcripts can look like. So what you're saying on those transcripts is aligned with what we're saying as a state is important. Right? And things just don't move that quickly. So I think that those expectation gaps are something that we all have to manage. And then the training piece, I mean, it's mostly internal. There's not a ton of extra cost, but it's just time. And anytime you get a bunch of people in a room, that's, you know, that represents a lot of dollars. So we better be like really investing the time well.
The last question I have for you is, for the people that are listening, so this could be people new to the superintendent chair. It could be people moving from one superintendency to another that haven't engaged in this before. What would you say as advice to people if they were entertaining the idea of reimagining the student success metrics like you are in Hopkins?
I would advise someone or a system that is thinking about this to do simultaneous work, which would be kind of my, like, if I were to do all of this over again, I would split my time between the reimagining, the bold reimagining requires courage outside of thinking, building new stuff. I would split my time between that box and the box of, like, supporting the traditions, the systems, the practices in the district that are good for kids and are going well, like continuing to support those things. Because when you have, like, all of your eggs in kind of the innovation basket, but not all of your people are there, and not all of your systems are there, and not all of your behaviors are there, then, like, people just feel schizophrenic. So I think it's really important to, like, figure out how you're going to hold both. Like, how are you going to, it's kind of like helping kids code switch, right? Who you are authentically is beautiful and wonderful. And when you're in, you know, a college environment, when you're in a professional environment, this is what is expected of you, right? You could call it traditional, you could call it whiteness, you could call it, you know, assimilation, Americanism, whatever, but this is, like, what's expected of you, right? And so I think we have to do that also for adults and for our system. We have to figure out how we're going to hold everybody to high expectations with, you know, some of the things that we've always been doing, as long as those things that we're holding on to are not hurting kids. And we have to have people and time and effort in the innovation space, building the new plane so that, you know, like, there's a new plane to fly in 5 years. But, you know, like, we have to have the old plane because it's still carrying people. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. Well, thank you so much for being with me. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this and explain the work that you're doing. And again, we've been listening to Dr. Rhoda Murray Prerieit. She is the superintendent in Hopkins, Minnesota, and she has been helping us understand how she is reimagining student success metrics with her staff, her leaders, her community, and her students. Thanks so much for being with me.
No problem, Bob. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.